And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We are your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
We are excited about the show today as we are celebrating the harvest moon today. This auspicious time of the year with so much abundance and celebration, and yet with the season of darkness just a couple of months away. We hate to break it to you, but it is coming. Today, though, it's about hose down. All that and more today on An Organic Conversation.
You know, Helge, I don't hate to break it to him. I am looking so forward to breaking to people. And anybody who is a fall lover,
keep breaking.
An autumn lover,
yes,
is, you know, you walk out one night or one morning and you know. And for me, that means celebration. And that's why I'm so excited about this show, is fall means celebration to me. It's my favorite time of the year. I think for many of us, it just has that feel to it.
It's, yes, really great. And I don't mind the winter at all. I think cold is wonderful. I love snow. I love any season, actually. It's always, you know, I like spring the most. But really, I don't know. It's all equally beautiful and important, as we will learn today.
Yeah, but before we get into that any deeper, let's hear the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. A budding coalition of urban food activists called the Boston Tree Party is organizing the planting of pairs of heirloom apple trees around the city of Boston in the hopes of ultimately forming a patchwork of free fruit and community engagement. The Boston Tree Party, launched in the spring of this year, has future plans which include partnering with the MIT Center for Civic Media to create an online interactive map and smartphone app with all the civic fruit in the Boston area to serve as a directory to this massive decentralized urban orchard. With a final U.S. congressional hearing 1 month away, environmentalists said they are preparing for more mass protests over a planned Canadian oil pipeline. TransCanada wants to build a $7 billion pipeline carrying oil from tar sands in Alberta, Canada, to refiners along the U.S. Gulf Coast. Activists are concerned that the pipelines could have long-term environmental impacts in the case of a spill. Thousands of people were arrested during recent protests in front of the White House. Sit-ins are planned for late September in Canada and early October in Washington to protest the controversial Keystone oil pipeline. And meanwhile, the Real Food Festival is again happening in Oakland, California, from the 23rd to the 25th of September. Tacos inspired by flavors from around the world, curry, barbecue, hot dogs, ice cream, noodles, and a whole lot more of the San Francisco Bay Area's awesome curbside eats. The Eat Real Festival celebrates all things tasty, fresh, and handmade, with a focus on street food, local wines, handcrafted beers, and traditional food craft, all featuring sustainable local ingredients. And no dish or drink costs more than $5. The Eat Real Festival will show participants the basics of how to make and grow food. From cheese making to backyard chickens, you can explore a do-it-yourself lifestyle with demos and lots of activities. And the entry is, as always, free. And these were the green headlines here on An Organic Conversation. I'm Jen Lloyd. Back to you, Helge.
Thanks, Jen. Yes, the Boston Tree Party. That's great. No limit to creativity. But what's up with that $7 billion Canada to Texas oil pipeline? This sounds like a news segment from the 80s.
70s?
I can't believe that we're still even debating that. So please keep protesting in this case. Keep wanting sanity to win. I think thousands of people got arrested already in front of the White House last week. But $7 billion. I mean, besides the environmental issues that are surrounding oil on every level, transporting it and taking it out of the soil, and the carbon issue and everything, $7 billion. Do you know what that could do to, if it was pumped into, let's say, solar industry? $7 billion.
I think we ought to figure that out and bring that back to our listeners. You know, how many solar panels
we talk about economy. We talk about jobs. We just had a new segment last week, I believe, or the week before, on how many jobs are connected when you invest in socially and environmentally sound solutions. Right. Okay. Thanks, Jen, again. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
We'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview with Ronnie Sands, a Waldorf school teacher who will share the wonderful story of Michaelmas with us, only here on An Organic Conversation.
A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. Yet all the night's magic seem to whisper and hush. Yet all the soft moonlight seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more dance with you, my love?
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about celebrating the harvest moon. We just had the harvest moon on September 12th and the fall equinox coming up on September 23rd. So this is the time for fall harvest celebrations. A time to celebrate, a time to be grateful, to put the hose down and let the work rest, but also to prepare for the upcoming season of darkness, winter, a time of great reflection, transformation, and insights, but also often seen as a time of a little worry about the coming cold and winter season. Our first guest is Ronnie Sands, a Waldorf teacher and biodynamic farmer for 34 years, who will share the story of Michaelmas with us. Michaelmas. She's joining us from Santa Rosa, California. Ronnie, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you.
It's so great to have you. And I heard about the story of Michael's Mass of Michaelmas just a few weeks ago, but it's a very potent story because it really applies to life. Tell us about it. What's the story of Michaelmas?
Well, actually, the story is a pretty old story. It goes all the way back to the 9th century, and I think the story went to sleep for a while, and it's woken back up through the Waldorf schools, because in Waldorf schools, celebrating the seasons and the festivals is really a way of connecting the children to nature. So we're trying to bring to them an imaginative picture where they can find a way to meet what's there for them in the world. From kindergarten through 12th grade, we find a developmentally appropriate way for them to come to Michaelmas. And when I was a kindergarten teacher, which was a long time ago, we took the story, you know, of the maiden who has to be sacrificed to the dragon because of a suffering in her village, and so she sits on that precipice and waits for the dragon to come, and then the knight, St. George, comes because he is a brave soldier, and he wants to defend her against the dragon. So he actually goes towards the situation and asks the Saint Michael for help, and Saint Michael is the archangel that stands in the background. And when we ask for help and we want courage, then he brings that courage to us. And so he is able. Saint George defends the woman and faces the dragon and saves the village. And it is a great resolve. So the question we have is, you know, what are our own personal dragons, and what do we face every day? And
usually when we face our greatest fears, actually when we walk towards that roaring lion, they become much smaller, right, the moment we stop running away from them.
Right.
And so, Ronnie, what is actually the meaning of slaying the dragon? What is the message that the story is trying to convey to the children?
Yeah, I think that especially in the times when we live right now, there's so much that's confusing and that actually doesn't seem to be so helpful. There's this this force of evil in the world, and there's always been good and evil. So is the dragon the dark side, and then we have to bring light to it? And some people even look at the dragon as the possibility for transformation. So it isn't just that you kill it and take it out, but that you maybe bring a different message to the dragon and see if you can change the dragon itself, changed the darkness itself. It's an archetypal picture, and I think everyone kind of comes to it with their own pictures that fit their own belief system. So we try to keep it more in the archetype and not so much into anything very specific. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty open-ended.
And especially in this time of year, as we are celebrating the harvest on this show and in this season, preparing for the winter traditionally has also been seen as a time of scarcity, of not knowing how long the cold will come, and the darkness where you can't, you know, maybe hide behind the work in the field is a time of great reflection. So it's true that the dragon in this case could be an outside circumstance or challenge, but it could also be facing your internal, you know, dragons or worries.
Right. And those are actually sometimes some of the biggest ones. And those are the ways in which we transform ourselves. That's why we're here, to work on ourselves. So finding that strength and courage, can we look to something greater than ourselves that will support us? And so Michael is the figure that when you ask for courage, or when you ask for strength, or you ask for guidance, that you leave that opening, that something will come, and also that you find greater light to take with you into the darkness. So, you know, how can we cultivate greater light? And one way we do that at the Waldorf School is thinking of others, is going into more of a service, you know, towards others, thinking of others.
We're talking with Ronnie Sands, who is actually a Waldorf teacher and a biodynamic farmer for over three decades. Today here on An Organic Conversation, I'm Helge Helbert.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
As we are celebrating harvest and the harvest time, this auspicious time between harvest moon and fall or autumnal equinox, and which is really the next question. How is the Waldorf School is based on Rudolf Steiner's principle of learning from nature and really finding many answers in nature. How is the play? There's a play around Michaelmas at the Waldorf School, as you said, ceremonial every year, as there are many within the Waldorf School system, really using the metaphor for personal development and the work around that. How is it integrated into the Waldorf teachings?
Well, we take this month, and every class is practicing something that they want to present at the play. So within each class, a developmental picture. But the play actually comes together as one long pageant. So the first graders will bring the simplest of a presentation, maybe the gnomes that are down below the ground. And then the second grade will bring another picture in the third grade. And it builds into an entire story. Usually it's the high school students who are the four archangels that speak to the dragon and do the slaying, and then we have the students who wear the dragon costume and come out.
How do you pick the archangels? I can imagine everyone wants to be an archangel once.
Well, I have to say, as a high school teacher, it isn't every high school student that wants to be an archangel.
Oh, really? I thought it was kind of the hot spot to have.
No, but there's one selected from each grade, so a ninth grader, a 10th grader, 11th, and a 12th grader. Great. And then there is the St. Michael representation as well. So this is a play that we put on September 29th because that is Michaelmas, and all the parents are invited, so we all gather together, and the parents witness this, and afterwards we have a potluck feast to celebrate the harvest, and there's bread that's baked in our brick oven, and everybody brings their favorite dish, and then we have had this moment of witnessing the conquering of the dragon, and that's what we take into the winter with us.
And that's really a celebration in Waldorf schools throughout the country, right?
Yes.
And so that is also, it's so fitting because now you're at the time of the farm where you talked about one of the ways that people deal with fall and their courage and slaying the dragon is by giving to others, and it's a time of bounty there on the biodynamic farm too.
That's right.
Yes. What do you grow, and do you bring the kids in your class to your farm at all?
Well, we have actually every student in the school, through a rhythmical schedule, has a day of the week that they come to the farm. So,
wonderful.
For instance, this afternoon, the 10th graders will be down at the farm studying herbs. And this morning, we had the 6th grade down there harvesting the field corn that we're going to be feeding to the cows that are on our farm. So we have quite an extensive farm and quite a number of farm animals that need to be cared for, and the students are all integrated into this. So throughout the day, different grades have that opportunity. We have also a permaculture garden that the high school students take care of and work in and plant and harvest. So we have a commitment to agricultural work in our school as important as any other subject.
It's wonderful, bringing the metaphor of story into the farm and the farm really into the classroom.
That's right.
We're talking with Ronnie Sands, Waldorf school teacher, about Michael's Mass, about Michaelmas, an ongoing annual tradition and celebration of slaying the dragon, overcoming obstacles, external or internal, and the message of the story. Thank you so much, Ronnie, for joining us today.
And thank you so much for this program. I think it's wonderful.
Thank you, Ronnie.
All right.
Ronnie Sands, Waldorf school teacher. Michaelmas can be observed at Waldorf schools throughout the country. We're celebrating the fall and harvest season. Our next guest is Caroline Casey, visionary activist astrologer, calling in from the East Coast. And she'll be with us within the next few minutes. Stay tuned. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be right back after the break.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, trace-sf.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Over 25 years ago, my husband and I started a business around our passion for ginger. We called it the Ginger People. Today, you can find our products at natural food stores nationwide. We love ginger. It's what we do. And the more we learned about the amazing properties of ginger, the more we realized that everyone benefits from eating ginger every day. My name is Abby Leeson, and I am with the Ginger People. To learn more about our products, the goodness of ginger, and how it can improve your health, visit gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
Today's show is about celebrating the harvest moon. We just had the harvest moon on September 12th and the fall equinox coming up in a couple of weeks on September 23rd. So this is the time for fall harvest celebrations. And we wanted to dedicate the show to looking deeper into the meaning of harvest and the activities of harvest celebrations. Our next guest is visionary activist Caroline Casey. But before we have her on the phone with us calling from Cabin John, Maryland, here is What's in Season with Mark Mulcahy.
What's in Season. Today, we're talking about something that either people are fanatical about or they know very little about, and that is fresh figs. It always surprises me when people say, oh, I've never had a fresh fig before, but they are always up to something. They're always waiting for a surprise when they get one. But they're a little anxious about trying them for some reason. Figs have two seasons. You may have seen figs earlier in the season around July, but that's just the short little window. All that is a teaser. And now is when the main crop of figs start. Now through the rest of the fall season is when figs will be fabulous, and they'll only get better each and every single week. Now, if you live in the Midwest, if you live in the Northeast, you probably say, I don't see a lot of local figs. That's because figs don't do well when temperatures get below 20 degrees. So a lot of the times your figs are coming from California or places that have a little bit warmer temperatures. So figs, what about them? There are about four or five main varieties that you see in the store. You see Black Mission figs, which are extremely sweet. And they even sometimes will be ooze a little bit of sweet syrup out of them. And they have a black, purplish skin with a dark pink flesh. And then there's brown turkey figs, which aren't quite as flavorful as Black Missions. They have a milder flavor, and then they have a little bit of dark brown skin. And then, of course, there's a Kadota, which is a very light green skin, and it's less sweet than other figs. But my favorite, if you can find it, for all you fig lovers out there, is you have to go out and seek the Adriatic fig. It's got a yellowish green skin, and when you open it up, it's got this rich, red, jammy, decadent flesh that you get to just sink your teeth into. And I tell you what, it is worth seeking out. You will definitely want to find it. When you're out there buying them, if you decide to buy some figs, you always need to remember that they are very fragile, so you handle them with care. And so look for something that's slightly wrinkled but still plump, and it might even have a little bit of a split on the side. And a good sign on figs is you want to see a little bend at the stem and a slight kind of wariness, kind of wornness to the skin. That means it's got more flavor. So how do you store them? Well, you don't store them for very long. That is just it. You get figs and you need to eat them within a few days. That if you are going to store them, just leave them on your counter for a little bit. They get a lot of air circulation, but you need to eat them in a couple of days, as I said. You can put them in the fridge and they will hold up, but the chilling tends to detract from the flavor. So those are the basic things that you need to know about figs. And the main thing is if you haven't tried a fig, you should go out and try them, because there's nothing like a dry fig that a fresh fig will just blow it out of the water. So that's what's in season right now and for the rest of the fall.
Figs, who knew? Thank you, Mark. Mm-hmm. And I have one in front of me. What is this?
That is known as a candy. Look at that jam. That's called a candy cane fig.
It's like a greenish yellow, almost looks like a striped tomato.
It's a new fig.
And when you break it open, it's like the most pinkish, reddish, beautiful, looks like jam already in the fig.
Mm-hmm. It'll taste like jam too.
It's called what?
That's a candy cane fig.
No kidding. Candy cane fig. You get the idea of what the inside looks like. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are celebrating the harvest time today. We'll hear from farmers. We heard from a Waldorf teacher about Michaelmas. And now our next guest is no less but Caroline Casey, visionary activist astrologer devoted to the principle of imagination, and that imagination lays the track for the reality train to follow. She's calling in from Cabin John in Maryland, and it's such a pleasure to have her back on the show. Caroline, are you with us?
I am completely with you guys.
Thanks for joining us today. We are right in between the harvest moon, which was on September 12th, and the autumnal equinox on September 23rd. A very auspicious time. What's the significance in astrological terms? How are you, first of all?
Well, I am, as we all are, in need of what I'm about to say.
Good, yes.
Which is, you know, the equinox equal night day, and then the night will grow longer than the day. So balance, you know, it's the time when we step into the center of the storm where it's calm. And I just want to put two of my favorite balancing motifs on our harvest
Please
work
do.
Table. One is wonderful British author Terry Pratchett in his great novel I Shall Wear Midnight. The young girl witch is healing the old patriarch, and she says, balance. It's all about balance. How to let the pain flow through you, not into you. The center of the seesaw is neither up nor down, and yet upness and downness flow through it. We go, yes. Again, pain of world, pain of our circumstance flow through us, not into us. And what I want to add to that, just as our, that we can all embrace, is when Richard Wilhelm was in China translating the I Ching, there was a terrible drought, and the villagers summoned the Taoist rainbringer, who sat for 3 days in meditation, and then it just poured. And Wilhelm went to him and said, how did you make the rain come? And he said, oh, I didn't make the rain come. He said, where I live, things are in balance. When I came to your community, it was so whacked out of balance, it took me 3 days to come into balance. And when I came into balance, the rains came. Mm. So
that is beautiful. And we heard about the story of Michaelmas slaying the dragon of fear, either outside circumstances or our internal struggles so often, and that very much relates this time to the mythical and historical and the pagan terms of harvest. How do you speak about the astrological world and the mythical historical terms of fall?
Everything, what is the eternal repetitive pattern of seasons that we want to align with in a traditional way? And then what is unique before all of us in our personal and collective circumstance. And we're allowed to reinvent. Saturn also will be in Libra, Venus in Libra. They are waiting for the sun that will join them on Friday, September 23rd at 5:05 a.m. on the East Coast. So we say a working definition of magic simply means a willingness to cooperate with everything, going, why not? So in the sense of the Michaelmas slaying of the dragon, this model would say, maybe not slaying the dragon, how about dancing with the dragon? Dancing with the dragon of fear, going, yes, cooperate with everything, even you old dragon, and that's a kind of, the West has a very kind of dragon, but the Chinese are, dragon cool, dragon good guy. And also part of our strategy, how to in some way come into everything as a potential ally if we're in the right angle of relating.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
This particular equinox that we're headed to, powerful time, and Venus will be, even as we're sort of descending into darkness, but Venus will be reemerging from the underworld several days after the equinox. Venus will reappear as the evening star. Oh, the star of peace. So that's heartening. Venus in Western mythos is, beauty and love and art returning even as we dive more deeply down. This equinox where we're approaching, the first half of the zodiac is really kind of about self. The second half of the zodiac that begins for us this year on the 23rd of September is about collaborative endeavor in the world, collaborating. If spring is the garden that we plant in the earth, this second Venus time that begins at the end of, the 23rd on, is about the social garden. Everybody kind of moving out of self into collaborative cahoots and into balance and finding their team. And part of that model is, how do we come together to fend off, the loneliness, like, ooh, and to illuminate with, art and beauty and acorns and wheat stalks and pine cones and apples and altars and on to Thanksgiving and all of that. But in my quoting from my own splendid book that I was referring to just now, Making the Gods Work for You, I just said, this is the beginning of fall, the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah, which will begin on the 29th of September, and the festival of the goddess Durga in India are both timed to the first new moon after the autumnal equinox. Both of these celebrations are intended to restore balance and right relationship within oneself and the world. The book of our life is open for us to read. inspiring us to rededicate ourselves to a life of greater mercy and kinship where every stranger is considered a messenger. You know, so this is the season when Venus takes her second incarnation, you know, inviting us to align with the autumnal rhythm of deep descent in order to gather our vision.
We're talking with Caroline Casey, obviously visionary activist astrologer, devoted to the principle that imagination and reality lay the track for the reality train to follow. She's calling in from Cabin John, Maryland.
Yes, just outside Washington, D.C. I am your agent there. And that brings us also to, yes, leadership. What are we going to do about leadership? Well, part of the myth in play is when Venus is in the underworld, you know, in Mayan or Mesoamerican mythology, Venus is a guy. Venus is Quetzalcoatl. And it's all about leadership and a culture's definition of leadership. So, briefly, the Quetzalcoatl is a good leader, but then gets a little remote, and people start being disappointed in him. And Tezcatlipoca, the Lord of the Smoking Mirror, we might even say, you know, a kind of corporate delusional character, you know, comes to him and says, "Oh, I know what you need. You need to drink this balche, this intoxicant, and then you will feel cute again." And so Quetzalcoatl drinks it. He drinks the drink of power and does terrible things, goes to war, you know, violates taboos, and wakes up in the morning with a terrible hangover going, "Oh, I've really messed up," you know, and goes away. And then what that signifies for a culture is time to reinvent leadership. And, you know, part of this fall, as we move into, is leadership wants to emerge in a more balanced and fair way, but first in our hearts. Now, Saturn, representing also leadership, is also in Libra now, which happens every 28 to 30 years. It's called the sign of its exaltation. And it's very intriguing, tying us into world culture, because Saturn will have returned to where it is, to where it was, you know, at the beginning of this year, when people poured into Tahrir Square in Egypt. Saturn was stationing at 17 Libra, and the image for that degree is leaders held to accountability, you know, false leaders placed under arrest. And we go, "Oh my goodness, there it was." Well, it will have returned to that particular place as we embark on this autumnal equinox, going accountability.
Yes.
So for all of us to define, you know, what is good leadership in ourselves and in the world?
Yes.
So that sounds like that's the message for this autumn.
Absolutely.
Is to define what is good leadership for ourselves and for the world. And collaboration has a huge role in that, yeah?
Absolutely. And you know, and Jupiter will be in Taurus, beautifully visible, you know, all night, presiding, again, this intelligence of wisdom in Taurus, the other Venus sign, which is the unifying story, you know, the Earth story and the economy. And here's you guys doing such great work. The economy, so it's not, oh, jobs or the environment, the economy or the environment. It's like, no. It's the economy of the environment. You know, this is the place to go. I love, you know, there's a saying that tyrants don't care if they're hated as long as the people don't love each other. And we might add, tyrants don't care if they're hated as long as the people don't love the earth.
You know, so, what? I think that, Caroline, I think we just need to just stop right there, because as we know, we could have this conversation for a couple of hours. I wish you
so beautiful,
a wonderful dance with the dragon this
autumn.
All of us.
Yes.
And we all do. Yes, we all do. And thank you so much for your message of collaboration and of personal leadership. It's always inspiring to have you on.
You're completely welcome. And can I just say one more thing?
Of course.
I love the phrase, to dree our weird. It comes from Old English, and it means to play our part in the destiny of everything, to be danced into the right place where we can contribute our part. And also, people can always find out more at coyotenetworknews.com.
Yes, coyotenetworknews.com. And you speak of balance, where after a full year of planting and preparing the soil and planting the seed, this is the time to put the hose down and bring balance to a very intensive work year and celebrate the harvest and the work that has gone before. So thank you for that reminder, Caroline.
Absolutely.
And yeah, fantastic to have you on the show. And ditto, you're doing an amazing work for us, for the world. So thanks for all your reminders.
Onward to more kahooting.
Yes, much more kahooting. Thanks. Caroline Casey, activist astrologer who joined us today from Cabin John, Maryland, coyotenetworks.com. Again, her website. Wonderful stuff. And we are talking about farming and hose down. There are festivals throughout the country that are being launched right now for the next weeks as we are celebrating this harvest season that we want to hear about and what it means to be a farmer in this time of year. But first, here is your holistic bite with Chef Sita.
Thanks, Helga. Well, this is such a sweet show, and I'm excited to talk about such a sweet fruit. We're talking about figs today. And I loved what Mark said about how some few people have had fresh fig. They are used to having the dried version. And when it's fresh, you get, well, we're talking about balance, and you get this balance from a beautifully soft, satiny flesh, and then these tiny seeds that crunch like candy in your mouth. It's no wonder that figs are regarded as an aphrodisiac, because when you talk about them, you kind of want to blush. They have these like very sweet surprises inside. From the outside, with the kind of muted color and sort of leathery skin, you would never know that what exists inside is something so gorgeous and rose-colored and smells both like honey and floral blossoms at the same time. It's just such a sensual fruit. And for that reason, I think figs are really meant to be shared. Whether you share them with somebody you adore or you share them with yourself, who hopefully is someone that you adore, try them with cheeses, something else that's really rich and decadent. And you can slice them and stuff them with some soft goat cheese and walnuts. You could bake them into a savory tart with caramelized onions and some triple creme brie. Or you could do a very simple and very exotic preparation, poaching them in sweet white wine and honey. And I add, like I said, a little bit more exoticism to this dish by drawing on the floral and the Mediterranean history of figs and add a little bit of rose water. So if you combine it with warming spices like clove and cardamom, apple juice, white wine, water, poach it for about 20 minutes, then everything is just amplified. The sweetness, this floral quality, this really sensual and also simple and elegant decadence of this fruit. And figs offer great health benefits. They're also rich in fiber, potassium. They're hugely alkalizing, but there is nothing better for you than the pure delight in something that you just adore or someone that you adore. So let the fig inspire the lover inside you and find healing through your heart and your taste buds with the holistic bite of the week, figs.
Chef Sita, thank you. Yeah, don't let figs be a part of your figmentation. No, fig, what is it?
Figment of your imagination.
Figment of your...
Manifest yes. them into reality.
That's right. It's all about reality right now. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are in the fall harvest season. Yes, figs are in season, and many, many, many other crops. We are celebrating the fall equinox and a time to put the hose down and to bring balance into an intensive year of work, to collaborate, find your team, find your friends, celebrate Earth's abundance and loving the environment, as we just heard from Caroline Casey. We have a wonderful guest on the show who has joined us a few months ago, Drew Rivers of Full Belly Farm, with a fantastic farm festival coming up, one among many across the nation, as again we are diving full force into the harvest season. She'll be with us in just a minute. We'll take a quick break. Stay tuned. More and that when we come back. Stay tuned.
What I have to say.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, my name is Abby Leeson, and I am the co-founder of The Ginger People. You can find our products in natural food stores near you, from delicious ginger drinks, sauces, spreads, ginger chews, baked goods, to skincare products. We love ginger. It's what we do. Add the benefits of ginger to your life, and you get that little kick, too. I am Abby Leeson, and I am with The Ginger People. For inspiration around ginger, go to gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today it's all about harvest. This is the time between September 12th, the harvest moon, and September 23rd, the fall equinox. So this is the time for fall harvest celebrations. A time to celebrate, a time to be grateful, to put the hose down and let the work rest. And also to prepare for the upcoming season of darkness in winter. Time of great reflection, transformation, and insights. We are now joined by Drew Rivers of Full Belly Farm, a 300-acre certified organic farm located in the beautiful Capay Valley of Northern California, about an hour or so northwest of Sacramento. Full Belly has been farming using organic practices since 1985. And Drew, we had her on the show a few months ago about flowers in the spring, and how appropriate to now have her back in this fall season. Drew, are you with us?
Yes. Hi.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah. Hi, Drew. So I was just, as Helga just said that, I was reminding them that you had been birthing lambs all morning when we talked to you in the spring. And now it's just, I'm just delighted to ask, you know, to talk to you about the harvest. So what is the time of harvest like for you, Drew?
Oh my gosh! I so wish we could have a lens here at the farm, because we are just overwhelmed with the production. In fact, for us, harvest is sometimes dealing with overabundance, just so many things, Asian pears dripping off the trees and melons, just swimming in melons and tomatoes right now. So it's really an amazing time of year. I'll be just a bit over the top abundant, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, Drew, I can hear the smile in your voice. So I don't want to just assume. So is this harvest time? I mean, it's happy because you have such a bounty, but is there a mixed emotion for you going into the winter? You know, during the harvest time.
I would say happy is the total definition for me. I mean,
but you're always happy. That doesn't really count year round. We can call you whenever.
Well, I mean, how could we not be happy with this amazing food that we have here? It's just so great. And, you know, and for me, looking forward into the fall, winter, it actually is an exciting time to sort of work on all these projects that we've had to put on hold while we are just primarily just every day picking and packing. And, you know, there's just not any time for anything but dealing with the harvest. And so the winter then becomes a time for sort of taking a breath and thinking, well, how can we do, you know, to make improvements on the farm? And so it actually becomes an exciting list-making time.
We just had the astrologer activist Caroline Casey on the show before our interview with you, and she was talking about this is a time of great restoring the balance of great collaboration, finding kind of your team together with friends and yes, to do the things that, you know, could not have been done throughout the year, but also to rest, to literally put the hose down. Will you find at an organic farm some time to rest? Is winter the time when things, you know, when the land gets a break? And you get a break too?
Yeah, well, so here, I think California, I mean, it depends where you are. I grew up in Vermont, where there's definitely a winter and cold and, you know, time that's sort of forced inside. Here, I think what we're really always looking for is rain, because without rain, our farm is, you know, sort of non-existent, and we really depend on water. And so it's a time for us to really hope and, you know, look forward to a time of water and renewing the farm with just deep soaking of the rains that start usually end of October, beginning of November. So we really haven't seen a cloud here since probably the last time I talked to you on the show. So yeah, it's many months without a cloud or anything. So we're really looking forward to a rainy, good rejuvenation that way.
And we're talking to Drew Rivers, farmer at Full Belly Farm, a 300-acre certified organic farm in Northern California in the beautiful Capay Valley. And Drew, yes, it's a celebration, a time of celebration. You're planning several things, but you're also planning hose down. So before the rain comes, you do have this annual celebration. How many years have you been doing it?
This is the 24th annual Hose Down Harvest Festival, and we are so excited about it. It actually comes at a perfect time when our farm is just sort of the real height of abundance is winding down. And so we want to share just sort of our fortune and our blessing at the farm here with everyone that can come. And so it's just a day of complete celebration, but also really a day about education. We do farm tours, and it's a wonderful one of my favorite, of course, harvest celebrations.
And it's for 24 years, it has really become one of, if not the largest harvest festival in Northern California. And there are celebrations throughout the country, dozens and dozens of harvest celebrations. What can people expect, and when is it? Hose Down is the first weekend of October.
Right. It's October 1st, Saturday. And they can expect all sorts of workshops on farming, from composting to pruning. They can expect tours of the farm. We have a beautiful draft horse wagon that goes around the farm with tours. But mostly fun. There's lots of hands-on activity for children, grain grinding and bread making, sheep shearing. I myself will be milking the cow if anybody wants to come help with that. And lots of dancing and music all day for both kids and adults.
And are you going to be doing, you know, one of the things I remember from a few years ago when I was attending, you used to have the cow pie pitch. Is that still happening?
The what?
The cow pie pitch.
can you explain?
Mark, this is the 24th annual manure pitch off.
Do we want to know what that is?
Yes, we do.
Contest.
So
starting at 5 o'clock, you can test your skills at manure pitch off. Yeah, and it's actually a hoot. It's really fun.
And when what does and so Drew, for many people who have not attended a pitch off, a manure pitch off, can you describe exactly what happens during this fantastic event?
Yeah, so we have a big pile of manure, and we have a contestants have to take aim at a bucket that's about
that would be Mark Mulcahy. Yeah, that's Mark Mulcahy. If you want to see our very own and organic conversation, Mark Mulcahy throwing cow poop in a bucket.
Together,
we'll have to both. Maybe all three of us here will be doing it.
No,
whoever gets the most manure in their bucket in a 2-minute time period. So it not only is it accuracy, but it's speed.
Okay. Yes, I will be driving the hay tractor. Actually, we will both be there October 1st.
Drew, I can remember for all of our listeners all over the country who attend some sort of harvest celebration, and there are lots of them going on for the next month or so, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But I remember going down, and it was a full moon, and sitting in Cache Creek on one of the nights during the hose down, and it's like all of a sudden the farm just became completely alive for me, just for that moment. Just it had quieted down, 1,000 people or whatever had come and gone, and people were camping, and all of a sudden I was just realizing just that moment of balance and of harvest and of beauty on the farm that you get to experience all the time just settled right into my bones just there for about an hour sitting in that creek in the moon. And I will never forget that moment.
And that is, you know, Mark, really, that's what our whole goal with this event is. The Hose Down is really about getting people here. That's why we started it. And having that moment on a farm, some people, it may be, you know, their first or only time where they get to spend the entire day and camp, like that we do have camping, and having people just walk around the farm and really feel the beat of the farm for that moment is just really critical, we feel, in having everyone understand the whole cycle of food and agriculture and where their food comes from.
And
so
farms,
I'm glad you got to see that.
Yes, and farms want to be celebrated, right? Caroline Casey speaks of a love for the environment, which is both people as well as places. And, you know, when 1,000 people come together to celebrate the fall harvest, there is that undertone at Hose Down, at Full Belly, as well as again, dozens of other celebrations that you can participate in near you, wherever you're listening, where it's almost a giving back. Showing up for a harvest festival is giving back for eating all year to the land, because the land wants to be loved.
Yeah, and I mean, there is a sort of a reminiscence of a potlatch for us. We love to, I mean, we have been
just a
so
gigantic one.
Fortunate to have this amazing abundance this summer, and to give back to people who have helped, you know, in all of that with us. So for us, it's a little bit of that giveaway notion. Please come and see how beautiful the farm is, and we want to keep our farm open. People always ask us, how come your food tastes so good? And we're convinced that it's the dancing that happens.
Of course.
Down.
Yes. It's all energy. Thank you so much, Drew Rivers, Full Belly Farm, and the upcoming Harvest Festival on October 1st, Hose Down. What's the website, Drew?
It's www.hosedown.org. And it's a complete fundraiser for many different organizations, nonprofit organizations working towards sustainable agriculture and ag. Yeah.
Yes. So it's not
really
just a great celebration, but it's also an important one to raise much needed funds for more work in the world of sustainable agriculture. Again, Drew Rivers, a farmer at Full Belly Farm, a 300-acre certified organic farm in Northern California. Thanks, Drew, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good
we'll
luck
see
with
you
your
on
event.
The 1st
yes,
of October.
You will.
Yes, sir. Yes,
bye-bye.
Drew Rivers, she's such a sunshine every time.
Absolutely.
Whether it's lamb being born or the harvest coming in, wonderful. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And there are many, many more harvest festivals around the nation. On the West Coast, of course, Full Belly Farms, Hose Down, October 1st, 2nd. That's hosedown.org. There's also the Washington State Autumn Leaf Festival in Leavenworth, Washington, and the Green Bluff Growers Association has a wonderful apple festival every weekend, actually, throughout October, starting in mid-September near Mead, Washington. And then from Oregon all the way to the Midwest. Mark, what do we have at the Midwest?
There's the 41st Annual Autumn Parade Festival in Oregon, Illinois. That happens every October 1st. And then there's also the Boone County Harvest Festival in Northern Illinois, which is taking place in Belvedere Park. And then on the East Coast, there's a couple different ones. There's the National Apple Harvest Festival, which is 10 miles north of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And just look, if you go online and look up harvest festivals, you'll find something near you for sure.
And we will put all those mentioned farm festivals on our Facebook site, An Organic Conversation Facebook. If you're not on it, please join. Lots of great recipes from Chef Sita, harvest festivals, articles that we like. The blogs, yes. Mark's blog.
Mm-hmm. Sita's blog.
Wonderful.
Helga's blog.
And we wanted to mention these national harvest festivals, some of them. In lieu of the time where we usually listen to you, the mailbag. I think we can't do it, but we'll do next week again. If you have a question or comment or concern, you can email us to share@anorganicconversation.com. We'd love to listen to you.
We always do. We always do. And one thing that I love to listen to at the end of every show is Helga's Organic Moment.
Yes. I have always loved stories. I remember driving with my parents from Germany to Italy or Spain for a summer vacation, me in the back, but as far forward as possible, hanging between the front seats for a grueling 14 hours or more. But life was good because I would listen to my dad tell stories, tales, really, of the German equivalent to Robin Hood, who stole from the rich to give back to the poor, or the story of Siegfried, who bathed in the dragon's blood to become invincible, only to die at the end anyway because of one single weakness. And now that I'm telling the story of my dad telling me stories, I realize that him telling me stories has become my story. Actually, everything, our entire life, is simply thousands of stories that, once told by us, turn into one very special story, our own. We hear it a lot in this food movement, and we say it a lot on this show. Know the story of your food. In this case, knowing the story of your food, how it is grown and produced, where it came from, if it is organic or not, and how the animals were treated, will help you make informed decisions. In the deepest sense, knowing the story of your food will keep you safe, and the animals and the environment will be better for it. But there's more to it. The story of our food is actually our story. How would it feel to say the cow suffered all its life in a feedlot and then was killed in a massive slaughterhouse, and then I ate it? Or the land was poisoned season after season, and the peaches had 28 different chemicals on their skin, and then we grilled those peaches at our Labor Day barbecue. Weird, isn't it? Because as a society, we have lost our connection to the land. We have also lost our connection to the story of our food and our awareness that the story of our food is part of the story of our lives, told or untold. So I know you heard it before, but once again, know the story of your food and make sure it's a story you would love to tell, because either way, spoken or unspoken, the story of your food is part of your own life's story.
Yeah, thank you very much, Helga. That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producers Lauren Mulcahy and Kristen Ponger. If you missed parts of this show or for any other show, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we will be back. Same here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye-bye now.
Live from Shannon's Blue. Baby, I-